You are flying high on Locked On Eagles. Normally, I would do the normal intros, but man, Benjamin Solak, at Benjamin Solak, S-O-L-A-K-W-I-N. What is happening, brother?
Mike, tell me what it's like to hate the team for which you really root and not believe in them in the playoffs, because I want to know what that's like. Me, I'm a believer, Mike. I am an optimist. I have faith in the men in Midnight Green, and I believed in the home team. They came out with the victory, and you know what? They not only did they come out with the victory, Mike, they also came out with the victory following the game plan lined out to them by Locked On Eagles. So you're welcome, Doug Peterson. You're welcome, coaching staff and everything. But so I'm just curious, how does it feel to pick against the Eagles again and be wrong again?
Because like I said, it was a reverse thing I had going on there. You understand how that works. So look, man.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
15-10 is your final. The Eagles defense holds up in a crazy, crazy, ugly game up to that point. I mean, dude, I don't know about you. I was sweating bullets for that thing. I was pacing around the living room. I mean, I don't even know what to start. What do we start with? Where do we start with this beautiful game?
Let's just, here, I want to just fire off happy things. Let's fire off happy things. Let's fire off first playoff win of Howie Roseman's tenure as the GM of the Philadelphia Eagles.
Boom.
Obviously, like, you know, there's the stint in the middle and everything like that. But how about Howie, who comes in, very little personnel experience, really rough with personnel for his first few years there as the GM, has the Chip Kelly fiasco, gets back in the seat, brings in a guy like Joe Douglas. Incredible moves this offseason to bring the team together, one of which being, and we've seen him, he did this with Chase Daniel a couple years ago, he did it with Nick Foles again, going out and spending money to get a backup quarterback who is like a fringe starter, who has talent. He's not just a camp body, and he has knowledge in the system. That move, among so many others, created a team with 22 players on it, 11 offense, 11 defense, and the other special teams, right? But all the different players, even beyond Carson Wentz, that enabled them to go out and win this football game. It is, to me, this is a huge boon for Howie. This is a big gold star on his resume, the fact that he put together a team that was able to win a playoff game when its starting star quarterback went down. Fantastic stuff. So happy for Howie Roseman. First playoff win for the Philadelphia Eagles under his tenure.
Yeah, I agree, man. And boy, it was a wild ride. We thought, I mean, one of the paths to victories for this was to get the ground game going. And we talked about it on the preview show, right, where the first down runs were an issue for the Eagles once Foles became the starter. And look, that really didn't change. We had 9 runs of 1 yard or less on first down. We put Nick Foles into some bad spots. I mean, in the first half, it looked bad for him up until the end of the first half, where with 1 second left, Alshon Jeffrey jumps off the inactive list, apparently, and gets involved with the game and sets us up for a Jake Elliott field goal to put it within 1 point at the end of the half. And then in the second half, man, Foles looked really in rhythm, really in tune with the offense. And it took a half to get there. But man, I got to say, he looked like a much different. He wasn't hitting huge plays, but man, he was moving us down the field. What'd you think about Foles, the running game, all that good stuff?
Yeah, let's talk a little Foles, because obviously we're going to have to get there at some point. And there's like, I just did the whole Howie thing, so obviously there's a lot of storylines I like besides the quarterbacking, but let's talk Foles. Because we say, oh, in that second half, he looked so much better, you know, he got into a rhythm. I think the big difference was the getting into a rhythm, because in the first half, he absolutely missed a couple of throws. I did not yet have my stream up, my totally legal stream, up for the first throw, the pass interference. I didn't see that one. Obviously, there was the big miss to Burton on a key third down in plus territory, right? Yeah. Missed Zach Ertz in the flat, so a couple of easy ones, right? So missing some throws in cold weather in a playoff game off of a bye, to me, I'm okay with that level of rust. Like, you know, I'll move on. We were at the point where, you know, the blame for Foles in the first half was kind of insane. And Philadelphia obviously coming out with a very run-heavy, run-centric attack, which is what they should have done. That was the correct way to go about things. To me, the biggest problem with the first half in the offense was not Nick Foles' play. It was a drive that did not involve a Jay Ajayi touch. That was perplexing to me.
Yeah.
That did not happen. That last drive of the first half. But anyway, Foles much better statistically, obviously, when it comes to the second half. What you simply saw in the second half was the natural scripted response of the Philadelphia offense to defense's adjustments.
Yep.
They came out and they were able to run the football very effectively in the first half. Atlanta responded by saying, we're going to put more people on the line of scrimmage. Not even more people in the box. They brought more people up to the line of scrimmage from what I saw watching live.
Yep.
And they said, listen, we're going to fill up all these interior gaps. But you saw, like, you know, you were charting those runs of 1 yard or less on first down. They had a lot of penetration Atlanta did on first down. They were there to stop the run on first down. And so Foles said, okay, I'm going to have to hit some of these quick-hitting play-action passes, and I know you want to get to this, Mike, so I'll lob it over to you. Quick-hitting play-action passes, Mike. You might have heard them called something else on the broadcast, but these are quick-hitting play-action passes, occasionally an RPO as well. I know you were pissed. Go ahead and talk to me about RPOs.
But, okay, so RPO, which also stands for run-pass option, which if you watched that broadcast, you didn't need me to mansplain that to you. Because, oh my God, they must have explained that. Within 10 seconds, you say RPO, you say run pass option, right? Chris Collinsworth. 10 seconds later, does the same thing. You don't have to explain it to us. The Eagles run more RPOs than any other team in the league. It's not even close. And they were clicking for us. And then sometimes, you know what? Sometimes play action is just play action. That's just how it is. So
right, and so let's talk about that. When you're watching a game, folks, and you want to impress the pretty girl sitting next to you on the couch with your knowledge of football offensive schemes, RPOs do not watch the quarterback, do not watch the running back, do not watch the receivers, watch the offensive line. Really the most surefire way you can watch, you know, this is like 95% of the time it'll work. Most surefire way you can tell if a team is running an RPO, you watch the offensive line. If they run block, then you go and you turn to the wide receivers. If they look like they're running very legitimate live passing routes, not just like, oh, it's play action, let me run a go route to distract you because I'm not blocking you, right? But like a quick, you know, three-step slant or a quick like six-step turnaround, right? Like a real legitimate pass that has that would be open, hypothetically. That's an RPO, right? If the offensive line is run blocking and then the quarterback throws the football off play action, that was an RPO. So often in Philadelphia's offense, you'll see a pass blocking offensive line, play action, and then just a quick hitting pass. That's existed, that's been forever. That is a very regular offensive deployment. It has the same effect as an RPO, and as a matter of fact, pat myself on the back here a little bit, when Foles went in as the starter after the Rams game, there was the big narrative, oh, he can't execute the RPO offense that Philadelphia runs. And I wrote a post for Bleeding Green Nation about Foles that said, no, because one of the main things that Philadelphia does is they just run play action pass. It has the same effect as an RPO. It stresses the defense in a similar way. Another way that I often frame them is a pre-snap RPO, something that you see as well. Philadelphia ran that with extreme efficiency with Foles. But what you saw in the second half is what Foles can be. I don't know. I said in the week previous, I don't remember what show it was, Foles played badly for two games, but he's so up and down. You know, who knows how he's going to perform against Atlanta.
Right.
Once he got settled and he wasn't thinking, he was just playing, he was just balling. It was just, all right, I'm checking down the field. I don't like my first reads. I'm just going to the check down, just dumping it off. He wasn't mind stuck in his feet, mind stuck in his mechanics. He wasn't robotic or anything like that. He was just chucking the football around. 5-yard little dink passes, perfectly fine. If Foles can give Doug Peterson that, Doug Peterson can make a game-winning offense out of that, which is absurd. Doug Peterson's the freaking man. But that was wonderful offense by Foles.
Speaking of Dougie P being the man, he coached Dan Quinn out of the building. And Steve Sarkisian, outside of scripted plays early in the game, was god-awful for the rest of the game. He was bad, and he was nutless. Doug P will let him hang. Dan Quinn seems super conservative on like 3rd and 13 when they're down a score or whatever the case may be. Just did not look up to the task of being, they looked snake bitten. They looked like a snake bitten team that didn't want to take any chances, and the Eagles were out there to do it. And look, the Eagles started off bad. You had the pass interference, and then you had the Jai fumble, which probably cost us some points. And then later on, we give Atlanta a free possession, which turns into a lead for them after the punt hits off a couple of Eagles players, or just one Eagles players, however you saw it. That put us in a bad situation to start. But, you know, then we drive down the field and Blunt is able to get in there on a G kick where we seal in the contained defender and all that good stuff. And once we got that offense rolling, there wasn't a whole lot that Atlanta can do. It was more about us shooting ourselves in the foot throughout the game and the execution, for instance, in the red zone with the fumble for Corey Clement when Nelson Aguilar was coming through on the jet motion and all that stuff. Yeah. We hurt ourselves more than Atlanta hurt us. And I didn't really expect the game to go that way for the entirety of it because, I mean, look, this is a Falcons team that has been there before. And to have a Eagles team missing their starting quarterback in Carson Wentz and then come out here, outcoach you, and then still stick around in the game after some big-time blunders was, I mean, that's incredible. That's a sign and a signature of this team of their mental toughness.
Oh, absolutely. And Mike, I mean, if I were to sit you down on Friday and be like, hey, Eagles fumbled the ball 4 times, one of which is inside of their own 2-yard line.
It looked like the Chicago Bears game, only it was against a good team.
Yeah, they lost a turnover battle 2-0.
Yeah, that's wild.
And they won the game. They gave up 10 points of the game, and then you have 10 points off turnovers. Yep. If a drive did not start in a turnover, this defense did not give up points. Right, absolutely huge. And you alluded to it. Let's hash it out a little bit. I'm sorry. I've done this a couple times now on this podcast. Promise it's the last one. We talked about what healthy Steven Wisniewski was going to do for this offensive line. Game-changing.
Yeah.
Game-changing. And quick shout-out, Big V, bad pass rep on one of the first drives, gave up a sack. In the running game, Big V was doing fantastic. They were quite well running the ball off the left-hand side, which is really wonderful because that right-hand side is their stronger side. They were running the ball really well on the left-hand side, which is very promising for the future.
Yeah.
But Wisniewski and Kelsey all game long were deadly working together on the little Aguilar, little counter draw out of the single T formation.
Yeah.
Right? Beautiful, or single wing, excuse
the
me.
Wing
That's
formation.
All Wisniewski and Kelsey with Lane Johnson pulling. There was that screen to Ajayi on a third down that began that 7 minute long drive that went through the fourth quarter.
Where Wisniewski caught two bodies. That was beautiful.
Wisniewski was murdering people all game long. Steven Wisniewski, number one, should be in Philadelphia for the long term.
Yeah.
No, that's number one. I believe he's currently got maybe another year or something like that. He's obviously at a very cheap deal right now. They should be looking into keeping him for the next easily 2 to 3 seasons. And then Jason Kelsey. We heard so much about Deion Jones and the athleticism of the linebackers coming into the game. And we talked about it. We said, you have right now an offensive line that can match the athleticism of the Falcons linebackers. And probably selective memory, I cannot think of a rep where Deion Jones beat Jason Kelsey,
right,
either in space or up in the middle or up down the gut. And I'm sure I'll be able to find one when I go back through the film. But the fact of the matter remains that the Eagles' offensive line, huge game. I said it on Twitter. I know we usually do game balls at the end, Mike. My game ball is going to Steve Wisniewski.
I like it.
The offensive line, markedly better across the board. Mm. And the biggest change was Steven Wisniewski was at 100% with his ankle. Huge addition to the offensive line. That's the offense. I don't know if you want to do your game ball right now. We got to talk some defense too, because they held Atlanta 10 points.
Fletcher Cox was ruining lives all game, and Brandon Graham was doing
Fletcher Cox could be arrested after this game.
The top 4-3 edge defender and run stop percentage, Brandon Graham. What about the play that he made on second down on that Falcons drive to set them up with, what was it, third and 15? It was second and 15, then they picked up some yards, and then they had third down.
Yeah.
Malcolm Jenkins was covering Julio Jones on fourth down on that last drive. People had some issues with that. If you go check out my piece on LockedOnEagles.com about how the Eagles defended Julio Jones, Julio spends a fourth of his time in the slot. Jenkins has always covered him for the Eagles, or at least he did last year. Last year on fourth down in a crucial situation, Jenkins blanketed him. I have no problem with him on Julio Jones when Julio Jones is in the slot in a key situation. He's come up big before. Didn't happen this time. But Jalen Mills on the last play of the game, my oh my, for all the criticism he has taken, and we've talked about him all year long saying he's limited athletically. You know, his technique isn't the best. But at the end of the day, his mental toughness and the way that he recovers and goes out there and gives everything he has, like he never screwed up in his life, and just, I mean, great coverage on Julio Jones on the last play of the game. Very, very happy for him. Should have had a couple of picks, but Julio is a very good defensive back this game.
Yeah, I'll put it to you this way. He's going to be a great safety in a couple of years. He's not my favorite dude. Not my favorite cover corner. He still made a few mistakes, but yeah, Jalen Mills, I mean, like, he's given, like, you know, the pregame hype talks in the secondary huddles before playoff games, talking to, that huddle includes Malcolm Jenkins and includes Rodney McLeod, includes Patrick Robinson. We're talking like veteran players who have been here for a hot second. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was one of the biggest voices about, you know, we're home underdogs. How about Lane Johnson, the dog mask, home dogs.
Yeah.
He puts the dog mask on and walks out of the stadium. Oh, that was huge. I loved that. But, you know, Jalen Mills, heart and soul, man. You know, you got to respect a guy who fights like that for Philadelphia. You love it a lot. My guys, Michael Kendricks, Nigel Bradham, Danielle Ellerbe, the linebackers, first drive, which, if you remember, Atlanta ran the ball very effectively on their first drive, straight down the field, right? This was after the fumble. Linebackers were flowing down insanely hard, coming downhill, playing incredibly physically. It's a high-risk, high-reward style of offense. And you saw, you know, the Falcons were very often able to get Tevin Coleman running back out to the edge, onto the perimeter, running these little pitch plays, right? And a lot of that has to do with the fact that Philadelphia linebackers were flying downhill, attacking very, very strong. And I think it was clearly coached. I think that was something that they were asked to do. So often, one of those linebackers was able to fill a gap so quickly, yeah, so effectively against a very zone heavy sort of team.
Yeah.
Right? You get your linebackers flowing downhill very strong against a zone heavy team. If you put yourself in the shoes of the running back, what you usually see on zone flow is you got your wall of guys and you're reading the flow and you're looking for a cutback. When you flow very hard downhill against zone, which you need a good defensive line to do this, you need athletic linebackers, right, which the Eagles have, you disrupt the entire image for the running back. Again, if you can put yourself in the shoes of the back, what you see is completely different now because there's so many different bodies. You're cut off from the angles that you usually get. Zone flow is a very finely tuned machine. Eagles just chucked themselves at it. They just threw it into a wood chipper, and it was fantastic. Devonta Freeman, who's the primary zone runner for Atlanta, non-factor. Non-factor. Yeah. Like, primary back for a run-centric offense, non-factor in the playoffs. We talked about this with Eric Robinson. Do you trust Matt Ryan to beat the Eagles on the road? Do you trust Matt Ryan and Steve Sarkisian's offense to beat Philadelphia on the road? Ryan does not have a good history on road games, and he didn't, right? Front and seven, fantastic job. Michael Kendricks had a great game. Bradham played a great game. Oh, excellent stuff. So, I tweeted this out. I want to get your take on it, yeah, Mike. Them having this win at home as home dogs, shout out to Lane Johnson, is huge because while they will not be favored against New Orleans and they won't be favored against Minnesota, whoever comes through, you know, this team has the narrative of, oh, you know we can win at home, we know we can do it, right? But once you actually do it the first time, this was a good Atlanta, yeah, team. So once you actually do it for the first time, I think that Philadelphia, a lot of belief, a lot of, you know, a lot of pride is going to be in that stadium next week on Sunday, baby. Oh, man, I'm getting excited. Yeah. Well, I want your take on what this win means.
Oh, it means everything, man. Like, all the stuff that you've been preaching throughout the week about being the underdog, being at home, like, people are hating on us, nobody's picking us, whatnot. And look, Chris Long can say that wasn't a factor for them, that they didn't need to get motivated, and maybe for some people that is. But then when you start using that as a rallying cry and you have demonstrable proof of it, I think that's big for the team psyche. I mean, and they believe that no one can beat them no matter what the odds are. That's huge for them. And they're going to be a team that, I mean, now that we're over this hump, I feel like gets back to having fun and really just going out there playing their butts off. And it's a fun vibe, dude. I mean, did you see the locker room after the game? Jeffrey Lurie dancing around like a crazy person.
Oh, wait. Yeah, I sent that to you. Jeffrey Lurie. Dancing in the locker room. Watch Vinnie Curry. Watch Kamu Grugier-Hill. They are loving this so much. Najee Good, Ronald Darby, they're all filming him. It's the funniest thing I've ever seen. Jeffrey Lurie literally looks like an elf or a pygmy or a garden gnome. I have no idea what's happening. Yeah. This is unbelievable.
Yeah, you can't tell me that win doesn't mean too much for this team when you see Jeffrey Lurie
in there. How long has he owned the Eagles?
Oh, it's been for the whole Andy Reid tenure since before then.
Right. So, I mean, okay, the last Eagle win, Eagle playoff win was what, 2007, 2006? It's been a hot second for Lurie.
Yeah, 2006, 2008, something like that. He was going bananas. The whole locker room is going bananas. This team really believes they can get it done.
How have we not yet spoken about my greatest son and special teams, the one thing we overlooked for the entire season and finally talked about last week?
Jake Elliott,
man!
Yeah.
Three field goals, one missed extra point, but a 53-yarder into the win to end the half?
Yeah.
Dude.
In very cold temperatures with a rock hard ball. I mean, that's clutch, man. Even though he doinked the extra point, which again, he makes the hardest kicks look easy and the easiest kicks look hard. But I wanted your opinion on two controversial calls, right?
Bring it to me.
On the very last drive, the Mohamed Sanu catch or no catch. What'd you think? I didn't think it was a catch.
No, I don't think either was a catch. The Mohamed Sanu one or the Julio Jones one on third and goal from the 9.
Do you think there was evidence enough to turn over the Julio one?
I have no idea what evidence enough means. Like, when it comes to catches at this point, yeah. I've got no clue what that is.
Right.
I'll put it to you this way. If you took somebody who had never watched football before, showed them the Mohamed Sanu clip, said this is not a catch, and then showed them the Julio Jones clip and said, is this a catch? They would have said no.
Right.
That's my problem with it. Either call them both or call them neither. I just, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I thought the Sanu catch was definitely no catch. His hands were on the side of the ball. It moved pretty hard, and then it hit the ground twice. And then the Julio one, there was definitely a lot of movement there. I just don't think they had the angle or enough view of the ball to be able to overturn it, but I didn't think it was a catch. But you know the NFL. We have no idea what is a catch? So Ben had the right answer. No clue whatsoever. But hey, man, we're looking forward. We get to scout our opponent tomorrow because we won a playoff game. and shout out to the Canal Street Chronicles for calling us frauds earlier in the season. Yes. After we lost to the Seahawks, even when we had Carson Wentz, because we ain't played no birdie. And your hack writers over there, well done. Good job. You're part of the people that are giving the Eagles the motivation to get done what they need to get done. I hope we see the Saints, man. I really do. And I like the Saints. It's nothing against them. It's just, I have an issue with terrible, terrible writers writing pieces that are lazy that they then get called out on by Bleeding Green Nation and say, oh, well, I don't care because I only spent 20 minutes on it because you're a terrible writer.
For context, Mike got into a bickering match with Canal Street Chronicles, who is the SB Nation side covering the New Orleans Saints, because somebody wrote a piece on a take about Philadelphia not being a very impressive team, so they hadn't beat anybody. In case you missed it, listeners, the Eagles are now in the NFC Championship game, so we done beat a few people.
Yep.
And we'll see if the Saints are able to make it, if they can get through Case Keenum and the Vikings.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And tonight we get to watch the Tennessee Titans and the New England Patriots. Ben, you got anything else on this gigantic butt clenching of a game win that we had here in the playoffs? I'm thrilled, dude. I'm thrilled for this team. What a game.
It's tradition. Mike, yeah. We got to read the three word yes. answers to how this game was. Locked on Eagles on Twitter at Locked on Eagles. After every game, we ask you to describe the game in exactly three words, and the best answers get read on the air. I'm going to give a shout out at first to at Ryan_Kieran, 24 Kieran Magic, because he made a pun, Mike. And you know how puns, they matter to me in a good deal. He said Julio, but it was spelled W-H-O hyphen L-I-O. So who as in, I don't know who that guy is. He lost the game. Julio Jones, and then just a big LMAO at the end of it, which that one makes me quite happy. At Inform Football, the O's in football are zeros. That's Tommy Gunther says another LMAO, Steve Sarkisian. So clearly the Falcons offense kind of a laughingstock here for everybody, which understandably so, man. Those last four play calls there inside the 10-yard line, Mike, they weren't great. They weren't great play calls. Let's see. We got a Fly Eagles Fly, of course. Mr. McGiblets, a common responder, says Dodd masks, which I think was supposed to be dog masks, and also is only two words. At Ryan Dow says what just happened, which
no
still
clue.
Trying to figure that out, Ryan. I hope you enjoyed the last 22 minutes of us talking because we tried to figure it out. At Trombley 22, Chance Trombley was an often listener, says big blank Nick. I'll let you fill in the blank. It rhymes with Nick. Simeon Kissed, Mike's little guy, says can't stop shaking. I'm currently dying. Two good responses. You'll be all right, Sim. And then the most important one to me, the most important one to the brand, at Epulets, says Jake Elliott GOAT, which is very accurate. I did not wear the jersey, but Jake Elliott, I'm so proud of him. Every good kick he makes means it's less and less likely I wasted money on a Jake Elliott jersey. And that's what matters here, Mike. That's what matters.
I love it, man. 15-10 is your final. I've been Michael Kist at Michael Kist NFL. That is Benjamin Solak at Benjamin Solak. S-O-L-A-K is how you spell that last name there. Follow at Locked On Eagles. We're a follow back account. Go check on LockedOnEagles.com for all your Locked On Eagles content. Ben, anything else? Any closing words?
Review, love us, share us. There's going to be four max Locked On podcasts left running by the time Sunday is up. So you better get your listens over here, man. It's going to be a fun week.
Keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, mother effing Eagles, fly.
Dude, I'm going to be dancing for the rest of the week.
I'm telling you, dude. I'm buzzing.
I'm jazzy.